This podcast is protected by copyright and not for broadcast. See rsn.net.au for more details.
Good morning, everyone. Lovely to have your company for Talking Horses. Busy show coming up this morning. We'll be talking with Rupert Lee, who had a winner in Melbourne yesterday, continuing his great run of success on racetracks around Australia over the past year. We'll also have Chris Simons feature on the show this morning. Chris has been heavily involved in the preparation of the horses being used in the Ride Like a Girl movie, which launches in Australian cinemas this week. He has a remarkable tale to tell. Plus, Seamus Mills back with us this week with his Insider Insights segment, the pedigrees and winner of the week, Be Good to Your Mother. Wasn't he impressive yesterday at Caulfield winning the Group 1? But first, we join Peter Tighe, who was involved in a very impressive winner in Sydney yesterday, Finch, now being set for the Cups campaign. The Group 3 Kingston Town Stakes winner in Sydney yesterday, Finch, was highly impressive, a six-year-old gelding by Frankel. Finch had a campaign in Australia last year and he's come back bigger and stronger. Peter Tighe is in the ownership group of Finch and he joins us first up on the show this morning. How are you, Peter?
Yeah, good, Joe. How are you?
Good. It was lovely to see you in the winner's circle yesterday. A year ago, of course, you were in the winner's circle with the great mare Winx, but yesterday you found yourselves there for a different reason.
Yeah, no, it was a really exciting day, you know, for all the ownership group, and we had great hopes for Finch, you know, that he'd come back bigger and better, and you know, Chris has just taken him through a few lead up races, and hopefully we could do well in those and head off to the Spring Carnival in Melbourne.
Yeah, big, strong chestnut horse. He really found the line well yesterday. Did you go into the race with much expectation of a performance like that?
Oh, look, we were hopeful. He's done everything right. He's pleased Chris and all the riders leading into the race, and then he just had to do it on race day to prove that he was a contender to sort of take forward to the Melbourne Cup. And we were very hopeful that he'd come back bigger and better, as you say, and He stamped his credentials yesterday.
How did you all get involved with this horse?
Oh, it's just a horse that came through. Prince Khalid Abdullah sent him over here, being by Frankel. I think they wanted to get the breed out and about, and he was pretty keen to win a Melbourne Cup, I'm sure too. And he sent the horse to Chris, and he retained an ownership in the horse, but was happy to sell a percentage of the horse. And in doing that, Chris invited several of his owners to be part of it, and we thought we'd give it a go. It looked like a good thing at the time, so myself and several friends here from Brisbane are in, and people in Sydney, and also people in Melbourne. So, yeah, just the love of racing is what gets us all in.
And interesting, too, that some of your fellow owners were at Bloodstock, who, of course, raced the other great mare of our era, Black Caviar. So connections of Winx and Black Caviar involved in a son of Frankel that's now headed towards the Cup. It's a great story.
Oh, it is. We had a great day yesterday there in Sydney. We were guests of Neil Werrett and his wife up in their box. And, you know, we were chatting about the possibilities before the race and we had our fingers crossed and just, you know what it's like, Joe, make it for a much super enjoyable day when your horse actually wins. So, yeah, no, it was a great day for all of us.
What's the plan now with the horse? Will he venture down to Melbourne yet or have one more run in Sydney?
Yeah, well, the options, you know, talking to Chris, he'll map out a more solid plan this week, but we could go into the Metropolitan in Sydney, then go off to the Caulfield Cup and then on to the Melbourne Cup. So that's a broad picture at the moment, but there's several options of, you know, whether he thinks he needs to get a few more miles in his legs or whether he takes an easier path. But at this stage, we don't mind whichever path Chris chooses. We'll be more than happy to turn up.
Yeah. And how's life been after Winx?
Yeah, no, Joe, it's been really good. I mean, it's, you know, she's the story's going to live on for a long time, so, you know, there's still a lot of interest from people, and yeah, we're still attending and going to a lot of events and charity events, and we've been, you know, luckily honoured this year at the New South Wales Racing Awards. She won Horse of the Year, and then we went to Victoria and she was honoured again there. So, you know, life's still been pretty busy, and you know, she's now, you know, set on a path of motherhood, so it's all before us, and plenty happening.
Yeah, how's she settled into life at stud?
Yeah, beautifully. We've been down to visit her, and my wife Patty, you know, loves spending time with her, and I think Winx loves spending time with her. They seem to get on really well, and she's, by all reports, she has done everything perfect in letting down from a racehorse to become a mother. So the team that are looking after us have given us glowing reports every time, every day, or every time they've spoken to us, they've said on a day-to-day basis she couldn't be any better.
Yeah. Whereabouts is she based these days, Peter?
She's based in the Hunter Valley. We'll say that much without giving away the exact location, but she's down there in a beautiful country and enjoying herself immensely.
Yeah, that's terrific. Any other horses you've got coming up through the spring, Peter, that we should be keeping an eye out for outside of Finch, of course?
Oh, Joe, it's hard to pinpoint them. I mean, we've got a, you know, we're hopeful we've got a two-year-old trialling on Monday there in Sydney, and you know, we're just happy to have one in the early trials, and we've got a, you know, a few that have we've got hopes for them coming through, but nothing I could really put my finger on for you. So we'll just, I think the surprise of all of it is what keeps us going. So we've got great anticipation for our horses, and sort of in the line of Finch, you know, he's franked it now, and we hope we get a couple more along the way. We can race in some of the bigger spring races.
Yeah. Lovely to have you on the program this morning, Peter, and catch up. Congratulations on the success yesterday with Finch, and good luck for the Melbourne Cup campaign. Hopefully we'll be talking to you again very soon about it.
Yeah, we hope so too. Thanks a lot, Joe.
That's Peter Tighe, who is a part owner of a very impressive winner in Sydney yesterday, Finch. Follow him as he heads down south for the Melbourne Cup.
The results that matter. The Talking Horses Racing Run-Through.
Big day of racing at Caulfield yesterday. We opened the program with a benchmark 78 over 1,800 metres. It was won by Shared Ambition, a four-year-old gelding by Born to See out of a Dr. Devious mare, Al Mansa. Race 2 over the mile, won by Skidore, a three-year-old colt by Hinchinbrook out of a Pentire mare, Hidden Message. They paid $240,000 for Skidore at the 2018 Magic Millions Gold Coast yearling sales. Race 3 on the program over 1,000 metres, won by Garner, a three-year-old gelding by Barbados out of a foxhound mare, Jalippi. Garner is related to winners Flop, Jamint, Nippy, Lippy and Washerwoman. Race 4, a benchmark 90 over 1,400 metres. The winner was Fabric, a four-year-old mare by Ocean Park out of a Pinsmere haberdashery. Fabric is related to winners Grand Harbour, Ocean Deep, Sue Real, Sophia Loren and Toast's Angel. The first of the features was the Group 3 How Now Stakes over 1,200 metres. The winner, Manicure, a five-year-old mare by Exceed and Excel out of a Lonro mare, Trim. Manicure is related to a winner, Clip. The Group 3 Foundation Cup over 2,000 metres, Brim Bang Rocks was successful. Brim and Rocks is a six-year-old gelding by Fastnet Rock out of an authorised mare, Colima. The Group 1 Sir Rupert Clark Stakes. What a great story this is. Be good to your mother. A five-year-old gelding by My Boy Charlie successful. He's out of a Karpstad mare, Lady of Helena, bringing up Daniel Bowman's first Group 1 winner. Winning relations to Be Good to Your Mother include Don't Tell Linda, Lady Jinx and Ready for Sure. The listed Jim Maloney Stakes over 1,400 metres was won by I Am Eloquent, a three-year-old filly by I Am Invincible and of a Schwarzier mare, Choice Words. I Am Eloquent was purchased for $220,000 out of the 2018 Inglis Premier Yearling Sales. And the last at Caulfield yesterday, over 1,100 metres, was won by William Thomas, a five-year-old gelding by Nikoni out of a Fastnet Rock mare, Girls Rock. William Thomas is related to a winner, Janice, and was sold at the 2016 Magic Millions Adelaide yearling sales for $110,000. Feature racing in Sydney yesterday at Randwick on a wet track. We had the T-Rose Stakes at Group 2 over 1,400 metres, and it was a bit of an upset there with Fun Star beating the hot favourite Libertini. Fun Star is a three-year-old filly by Adelaide out of a Dame Hill mare, Star Spangled. Funstar is related to winners Baggy Green, Brilliant Mind, 11 Seconds, Jack Strikes Back and Young Star. And they paid $80,000 for her at the 2018 Ingwas Australian Easter Yearling Sales. The Group 3 Bill Ritchie handicap over 1,400 metres won by Colding, a four-year-old gelding by Ocean Park out of a Dan Zero mare Magic Star. Colding is related to winners Cavalia, Miss Upstart, Pradia, Samson, Superhero and Unique Magic, and was sold at the 2017 New Zealand Bloodstock Premier Yearling Sales for $170,000. The Group 2 shorts over 1,100 metres, Pierata couldn't have been more impressive, could he? For Greg Hickman, a five-year-old entire by Piero out of a Flying Spur mare November Flight. Pierata is related to winners Ashokan, Fields of Tuscany and Power Up Rise, and was sold at the 2016 Magic Millions Gold Coast Yearling Sales for $160,000. The Group 1 Optic White Stakes over 1,600 metres, the George Main, won by Avilius. He was super impressive. He's a six-year-old gelding by Pivotal out of a Sunday Silence mare, Alessandria. And the Group 3 Kingston Town Stakes over 2,000 metres, a horse to follow for the Cups, the winner Finch, a six-year-old gelding by Frankel out of a Woodman mare, Binch. Finch is on to bigger and better things, no doubt.
The Talking Horses, winner of the week.
Into the straight at the 300, Be Good to Your Mother, two lengths Age of Chivalry, followed by Dispatch Sosie Bond down the outside from Cliff's Edge. Be Good to Your Mother at the 200 metres, a length and a half Age of Chivalry, Cliff's Edge, Witchy Turf, Sosie Bond. Be Good to Your Mother, still going well at the 100, leads a length and a half. There's a big party at the ball tonight. Be Good to Your Mother from Age of Chivalry, Witchy Turf third.
The horse with the quirky name Be Good to Your Mother winning the Group 1 feature of the Sir Rupert Clark Stakes at Caulfield yesterday over 1,400 metres. It's been a quick rise to the top for the five-year-old gelded son of My Boy Charlie, who reeled off six consecutive wins between March and August, culminating in the listed Regal Roller Stakes at Caulfield. The sequence was then broken last start when he finished sixth in the Group 1 Menzies Stakes at Weight for Age level 3 weeks ago. But sent to the front after turning for home yesterday, they couldn't catch him at Caulfield. He was very impressive in winning. He was purchased by his trainer, Daniel Bowman, for $28,000 out of the Donnybrook Estates draft at the 2016 Magic Millions Adelaide Yearling Sales. Be Good to Your Mother now advances his record to 8 wins from 13 starts and career earnings of just under $600,000. He's the 7th foal and 5th winner out of the winning Karpstad mare Lady of Helena, who is a half-sister to the Group 1 STC Canterbury Guineas and Group 1 Waikato Draft Sprint winner Western Red. Lady of Helena was purchased for just $600 at the 2013 Ingwas Australian Easter Broodmare Sale. She's an unraced 3-year-old gelding by Sidestep and a 2-year-old colt by Casino Prince, which was her last foal as she was retired in 2017. And Be Good to Your Mother follows the triple Group 1 winner Jamaica and the ATC Sires Produce Stakes winner Peggy Jean as winners at the highest level in Australia for My Boy Charlie, who shuttled for 9 seasons, the final season being in 2017.
Now on Talking Horses, Insider Insights.
Good morning, Seamus. How are you?
Very well, Joe.
Well, firstly, yesterday's racing around the nation, it was a shame there was a dampener on the Sydney track.
Yeah, it was. Look, obviously, it was, the shorts, I suppose, was a bit of a preview to the Everest and probably one of the more mouth-watering sort of races of the year. But obviously, a lot of scratchings took a little bit of the shine off, but still what I thought was an outstanding performance by Pierata. And I guess the fact that he's put that run on the board now would elevate him to just about the favourite for the Everest.
Yeah, and it's an interesting talking point to Pierata's sire, Piero, who's been on fire since he's been at stud, Seamus. He, of course, has Pierata likely now in the Everest. And what that's going to do for him as far as the sire's title goes in Australia is significant.
Yeah, look, these races, obviously massive prize money on the Everest and the Golden Eagle, and these high prize money races and the effect they have on the size title. I am a traditionalist, and so personally, my feel is that we perhaps need to navigate a new way of establishing our champion sire. I know it hasn't happened yet, but I do feel like there may be years now whereby the integrity of these things will be compromised, by maybe a stallion of lesser ability coming up with a horse that's capable of winning one or two of these races.
Yeah, and Piero is also likely to be represented by Arcadia Queen in the Everest. So the impact potentially of one of his horses winning a $14 million race like the Everest does place him in the box seat as far as the sire's title goes, which is currently determined by the amount of prize money a horse's progeny earns. How do you think it should be determined?
Oh, look, I think obviously there's ways to start investigating it. I think maybe an average earning index could be one way. Look, I think that we generally reward black type, and we reward horses of the best quality. So, obviously a percent of stakes winners to runners. There's a few different ways you could slice and dice it, but. It would be a shame to go away from prize money because I guess that is the traditional way of doing it. But if we feel, or if industry feels that that perhaps the results are going to be skewed from these things, might be something that needs to be discussed.
Mm. Seamus, to some other stallions that are in form at the moment, what about Toronado here in Australia? Really hit his straps, hasn't he, with another winner during the week at Sale, High Talk.
He is a horse really coming on the High Chaparral sideline. Really has established itself now in Australia with Dundeal and So You Think, and now Toronado. I mean, even in just regards strike rate of these High Chaparral stallions, it's been quite amazing. And Toronado looks to have really hit his straps now. I think he's got a number of promising horses for the spring. And look, I'd say by the end of the spring, his service fee is going to look very good value.
And internationally, American Pharoah had more success during the week with a winner in Japan, Seamus. Now, his first yearlings in Australia are due to hit the sales ring in 2020, and there's much anticipation around that. But interestingly, the majority of his winners around the world so far have been stakes horses. So he was not only a high-class racehorse himself and Triple Crown winner, but what a producer.
He's really starting to, I think, make Australians sit up and notice, obviously with a number of turf performers, obviously that's always a question mark on American size that go to stud, exceptional racehorse. And we had a little taste of them, I guess, given the weanling sales next year. I thought they sold very well. Generally the weanling sales, I guess, are not the top end of a stallion's crop. And certainly if that was the case with American Pharoah, I think there's going to be some beautiful yearlings at the sales board next year. In particular, the traits I've seen in common with them is their ability to walk. I know people joke there's no walking laces, but good walks sell yearlings, and I think buyers will see that with these American Pharoahs.
Another high-profile former racehorse and now top stallion, Frankel. He had a good winner yesterday in Sydney, Finch. We spoke at the top of the show with a part owner in the horse, Peter Tye. He looks set now for a Cups campaign.
And very well, obviously, in there last year. And if anything, I suppose these horses, most trainers will tell you they improve as they acclimatise. Perhaps takes them a prep or two. And yesterday's performance, I thought was pretty impressive. You would have to say he's right on target. And having had that experience before, probably has to be considered now one of the genuine hopes.
And Seamus, interested in your opinion on what happened during the week, the controversy around Mystic Journey and the abuse that her trainer Adam Trinder copped from disgruntled punters after her defeat last Saturday and going down to 100-1 shot in Gatting. So I have my own firm fixed opinion about this, but I'd be interested firstly to get yours.
Oh, look, it's a great shame. You know, I guess in any sport now, social media has opened it up for people who, I don't know what's going on in their lives, but it's pretty much commonplace, isn't it? I mean, I follow all sorts of sports. I'm a bit of a sports nut, but if you're also on social media, people just feel like they can say and do whatever they want. But I guess that a lot of people in this case have taken it a step too far to get in direct contact with the trainer is reprehensible. But it is the society we live in now, unfortunately.
Yeah. Do you think, though, the media plays its own role in propelling this type of behaviour as well by giving these anonymous trolls on the internet oxygen in the first place?
Yeah, well, look, it's I guess he came. You know, the story has got told, and in a case where media does spread the word, but I guess in this case the direct contact, I suppose, you know, seems to have shaken them enough to be telling the story, you know. But it's a great chance to see anyone upset. I mean, and first and foremost, I would have said that, you know, the one thing the media needs to do more is to make the horse the hero. And I don't think that people feel, you know, sort of connected enough. The idea that people on the punt, which is obviously an enormous part of our industry and very important, but the horse needs to be hero, and hopefully you would teach a few more of these people to have respect for the animal.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think the media presentation generally can tend to be a bit too focused on the form and the punt. And as you well acknowledge, it is a hugely important part of the industry and the backbone of it. But there are many other good talking points and ways to analyse an outcome of a race, so the performance of a horse, and it doesn't have to just be about the punt. But anyway, it's happened, and hopefully we can all move on and Mystic Journey comes out next start and absolutely wallops them, and those punters that were incensed are silenced. Anything else you wanted to touch on before we wrap up?
No, look, I just wanted to... The only other thing I'd say is the Chamadale Sireline will hit Australian shores in full force the next couple of years. I think the performance of the year almost was Godolphin's two-year-old in Europe, Pinatubo, which I had to Google, is named after a volcano, active volcano. I thought it was an unbelievable performance. He won a Group 1 by 8-10 lengths. He's got an amazing action, this horse. You wouldn't think you'd see another Frankel as quickly as this. And obviously this horse is not there yet, but it was the performance of the year so far. And now Godolphin have probably three Sons of Chamadale all destined to shuttle to Australia with Earth Light and Blue Note. So get your matings ready.
Yeah, and Charlie Appleby was in awe of the horse's performance at the Curra, and now he'll likely run in the Dewhurst Stakes at Newmarket on October 12th.
He's an amazing animal. I haven't seen a mechanical sort of action like his since Frankel, and this stage unbeaten. Doesn't look to be much over there that will threaten that either.
Seamus, great to have you on Talking Horses this morning. Just as a side note, Taylor Swift, how devastated are you that she's not coming out for the Melbourne Cup week?
I can honestly say I'm very devastated. I thought it was a brilliant coup, and even if only done for publicity and so on, I thought it was really an amazingly good job for them to get it done. It's a shame it's gone down in flames, and I would have been in the front row.
Her cancellation certainly set tongues wagging, hasn't it?
Well, look, it's even for the publicity, I guess it had some effect. But I think, as I said, I think it's a great show. I was a huge fan.
All right, Seamus, you have a great week, and we'll look forward to talking to you next Sunday.
Always a pleasure, Joe.
That's Seamus Mills joining us for Insider Insights this week on Talking Horses. Looking forward to the much-anticipated release of the movie Ride Like a Girl this week, set to premiere on the 26th of September. And someone who has played a pivotal role in the preparation of the horses involved in making this Rachel Griffiths-directed movie is Chris Simons, who joins us as a special guest this morning on Talking Horses. How are you, Chris?
I'm great, Joe.
Well, how have the past sort of few months or longer been as far as your role with Ride Like a Girl been going?
Yeah, well, it's been an amazing journey, starting from the beginning. It dates back to probably 2016 when I was first approached by producer Richard Keddie. He then introduced me to Rachel Griffiths, and I sat down and had discussions regarding the movie that they had just secured through Michelle Payne's management. And they said that my name continued to come up when they were discussing situations of creating the movie and how they were going to go about it. So they wanted to get in touch with me based on what I'd done with Channel 7 and the helmet cameras. So first of all, I was only kind of employed by Rachel and Richard as a, I suppose, an advisor's type of role. But that just expanded into so much more as we got further into it, and we created this massive team. So there was myself, my wife Sam, and we also had Peter Patterson, and together we all had different genres, I suppose, and we were experts in different parts and different fields. So Sam, my wife, was in charge of the welfare of the horses, which was absolutely paramount throughout the whole production of the movie, pre and post production. Peter, being one of the Pattersons' fantastic horsemen, probably one of the best I've ever worked with, he just brought some expertise to work with the horses. And me, I suppose my role was to not only ride and be a cameraman throughout the movie, but also help in choreographing the races. So I actually worked with most departments, being the arts department, wardrobe, even parts of the script that they weren't sure of what sort of lingo to use. So, it was a massive operation. We started off with about 22 horses and then expanded towards the end. We probably had 36. We had about four or five Prince of Penzance, and we did things that have probably never, ever been done before. And from the point of having actors on horses and having a team of horses which are thoroughbreds and you know, we all know that they're quite a flighty animal, I suppose I developed this such more respect for the horses, working with them in a different way, not just getting on them race day and burling them around. I had to work with these horses day in, day out. So I developed this amazing relationship with them, and we had at times maybe 100-plus people on the ground which had, with all due respect, they didn't have any horse skills or had never worked with horses, being the crew, camera crew, etc. So we had to really train our horses to be able to put up with the people, not the people to put up with the horses. So there was a lot involved. They had drones and cranes and all sorts of things, you know, that they had to endure throughout. But we had this amazing team that, and I had a few horses that I just developed this amazing trust with them and they with me, because I was at times hanging off the side of horses trying to get those shots in a race field and using cameras down on the ground, and it was pretty extraordinary.
What an incredible journey, Chris, and so important to play that role that you have, because the criticism of many horse-type movies, particularly racing-related in years gone by, has that they've missed important things with the horses, things like you mentioned, the lingo, but also the way that they've been presented and the accuracy of that. So I know Rachel Griffiths was very keen right from the outset when they first thought about doing this movie that was going to be a very key thing for them to focus on.
Absolutely. one, we have a beautiful story, one that we are all very well aware of, and it is an amazing Australian story of 2015, the Melbourne Cup. And then to add different elements to it, which is the story with Michelle growing up in such a large family, her brother Stevie having Down syndrome, but being part of the journey with her is remarkable. And then to add to that, to have Stevie play himself in the movie was unreal. And he just did the greatest job ever. And I'm sure he's going to go on to bigger and bigger and better things from that. But so that we already had the story, but this movie's got so much more than just a good story. It's got a bit of humour. There's a lot of emotion in it. And I suppose we wanted to bring some action, and the action being the race scenes. And we wanted to bring people as close to the action as possible, like we do with the Channel 7 helmet cams, but on a different scale. And I think we really did that, and we've executed extremely well from all reports.
Mm. I'm sure there would have been some rather hair-raising and entertaining moments along the way.
I'm not going to lie to you, Joe. It probably took 10 years off my life. my wife lost 10 kilos doing it, and I think Peter, well, he's pretty cruisy, Peter, so he just moseys on and does what he does. But it takes a really good team, and starting from the top, which is Peter Patterson and Sam, you know, that they played such a pivotal role. I get a lot of credit for it, but I shouldn't, because they did so much more than I did. You know, I was the front of it, but it takes a good team. But then below that, we had so many great riders that came in and did all the race scenes, and they had to be courageous. We know how dangerous it is out in the race. Well, you then put a jockey into a race field with holding cameras and things like that. So there's a massive danger element in what we did, and we did it well. We didn't harm any horses in the movie, which was paramount, and we had a lot of great ground staff as well. So, you know, it's a team effort, and everyone played their different parts, and it wouldn't have been possible without them.
Mm. Where were the majority of the horses sourced from, Chris?
So most of the horses, I just reached out to a lot of different trainers that I ride for. We got a lot of, well, they were all retired racehorses. Whether they were retired because they were too slow, or whether they were retired because they were at some stage had an injury. So that's where we sourced most of them. We only brought one horse throughout the whole production, and that was a horse that I used, Kevin from Seven, on the weekend. So he was one of our Prince of Penzance, and he's one that we've still got here. A lot of them have gone off to where they were from, or we did rehome a lot to go on and do equestrian and things like that. So that was a process as well, to make sure that these horses got the best life after the production, and it was paramount that they went to the right home.
Mm. And, yeah, Kevin, did he play a starring role? How did he fit into the whole program?
So Kevin played a massive role. He didn't do any race scenes. We basically didn't want him to, because, and ironically, his race name was Lord O'Brien, and he was trained by Patrick Payne originally. I then purchased him off Nathan Hobson, and he only had maybe five or six starts, and he was still a maidener. He had the greatest personality. Well, he's got the greatest personality. He was just a cruiser, and we didn't want to get him fit and have him peaking, because we used Kevin as a horse for Teresa Palmer to ride, and she developed this great relationship with him. So she rode him most days, and Peter Patterson taught her how to ride. And I'll say that Teresa was an absolute delight to work with. She's courageous, fearless, and she rode ponies as a child, but hadn't ridden for a long, long, long time. And Peter, what he was able to transform Teresa into was remarkable. And honestly, I can say that if Peter had continued to go down that path with Teresa, he could have nearly had her riding in races in probably another couple of months, because Teresa picked it up really quickly, and she was getting into the jockey position. She did a lot of the riding, not the race scenes, but a lot of the other riding on her own. And So with Kevin, or Lord Oberyn, or Prince of Penzance, whatever we want to call him, he was, you know, a rock for her. And she had one incident at Flemington one day where Kevin decided that it was race day, and he took off and did a full lap of Flemington. And thankfully, with the guidance of Peter throughout her lesson, she was able to stick with him all the way just up until the end. When he pulled up to a trot, she was so exhausted she slid off the side. But it was the only incident we had. And anyway, no harm, no foul. And Teresa, to her credit, the following day got back on at the Patterson's place on Kevin and rode him around and continued to ride him after that. So his main scene is probably the beach scene. He did that scene. And that took a lot of prep in itself. We both, Peter and I, did a lot of prep work to get Kevin used to going to the beach, because risk management and stunt coordinators and all this sort of thing is involved. So we actually trained Kevin, or Peter did, to chase the grey pony. So during that scene, there's a grey pony out in front, but you can't see it. It's not in the shot. And that was just the measure we put in place so that if a worst-case scenario that Teresa was out of control or whatever, naturally Kevin would run to the pony. So to do that, Peter and I took the horses to the beach every Sunday during the production. We started off at Safety Beach where it was nice and calm, because Kevin was actually terrified of the water. So we had to build his confidence up, because we knew that scene was going to be big. And we just had to put him in every scenario that could possibly go wrong. So we ended up taking him to Gunnamatta, where it was pretty heavy surf one day, and I rode him, and I would take my feet out of the stirrups, let go of the reins, and just hang on for dear life. And that way we could see if Teresa was to lose her stirrups or drop her reins or whatever, what's Kevin going to do? So we had to trial that throughout, and together Peter and I worked so well as a team, and I put a lot of trust in him as he does in me. So it wasn't just a matter of turning up for that scene to ride along the beach. It took us 2 months to prep both Peter's pony and Kevin to be able to do it.
Mm. So has this been one of the greatest challenges for you as a horseman, Chris, in your life, would you say?
I wouldn't say it's been the greatest challenges. It was probably one of the best experiences I've had. I'm one of those people that never knock back an opportunity, and I like to, you know, take any opportunity that arises in front of me, and I loved it. As much as it was draining, it was mentally and physically draining on all of us to do it. It was a pretty hectic, probably 4 months. They were very early mornings. We'd be getting up at 2 a.m., making sure the horses were fed before they left to go on to their jobs, and prepping the horses before they left and all that sort of thing. And then we might not get home till 10:30 at night, and then back up the next day. And we had a small team of people on the ground helping us, because I probably I misjudged how big a job it was going to be. And once it was plugged in, you know. You can't go, oh, we need, you know, extra staff and all this sort of thing. So we just had to really knuckle down and work hard together. But, yeah, it was challenging, but it was so enjoyable at the same time. And I met fantastic people along the way.
Yeah, and working with Rachel Griffiths, how did you enjoy that experience?
Yeah, that was good. To be honest, I didn't have a great deal to do with Rachel during production, because we had two units. We had the race unit, which was my unit, and the main unit, which was, I suppose, when they're doing all the stuff at the house and all the other scenes that you'll see throughout the movie. But we quite often would cross paths at some stages, but when they were filming at in town doing a scene there, we would be at Werribee or Flemington and doing different race scenes there. So, yeah, we didn't have a great deal to do with each other. Rachel and I get along extremely well, and obviously pre-production, we spent a lot of time together doing the recces, where we had to go to different locations and work out what's what, and we did a lot at Huntley Lodge, Johnny Marr's old property, and So I sourced a lot of those locations for them. So yeah, it was good fun.
Yeah. Would you do another movie?
I would do another movie. It'd have to be the right one though.
It's hard work, isn't it? People see one side of these things, but the processes that go on behind the scenes are quite extraordinary. So then to watch the finished product must have been enormously satisfying for you.
Oh, it was for sure. You know, the action shots, I thought we nailed it. Surprisingly, for what you put in, they only really use maybe 10-15% of what you get on the reel, which... I suppose you look back and go, oh, I can't believe we went to all that trouble for that shot, but that didn't get used or whatever, for whatever reason. You know, it is rewarding to see the end result. And I suppose it's opened different avenues for me. We've been approached to do a couple of different things, commercials, whether it's with horses or other animals, because obviously we've got our Funky Farm down on the Mornington Peninsula, home to roughly 200 plus animals, ranging from wallabies, dingoes, emus, birds, crocodiles, all that sort of thing, wombats. I can hear one now rattling at the fence. But, you know, so there's, well, I've actually got a cockatoo in the 4X Gold ad at the moment, which is pretty cool. And, you know, I like to look at what's available for our animals, and we do a lot of training out here, so our animals are very great, you know, with humans, and we actually do training workshops where we've had professional dog trainers come out here and learn about training wombats and emus and other animals that we do target training, and we're looking into liberty training and stuff like that, so it's pretty cool.
It's really expanded for you, hasn't it, the Funky Farm, so it's all going well?
Yeah, it's going really well. It's a never-ending project. It's pretty full-on. But again, you've got to have the right people around you, and we have. And we've got a couple of professionals that work here from other zoos. We've got a fantastic animal behaviourist/vet, and she's doing our workshops here. And we learn so much. And, you know, we don't go into this thinking that we know everything, because both Sam and I are learning on the job. It's our passion. We love it. And again, you need the right people around you to help assist you and execute what you want to do, because it's so much more than just a place to come and see the animals. We do a lot around special needs. We had schools come through yesterday, and, you know, we do birthday parties. We do locations. So there's a lot going on. It's a never-ending project, but as I said, it's my absolute passion.
And plenty of noise in the background there. We can hear, I think, your 4X cockatoo squawking in the background before. Have you got a favourite animal on the farm?
You know, I get asked that a lot, and I don't really have a favourite, but if I had to pick one out of the whole 250, surprisingly, it'd have to be my mate Crikey, the crocodile, that bit me some months ago, but I'm actually looking at him right now. He's just an amazing creature that you can never underestimate him. But he's just awesome to look at.
Chris, so fantastic to catch up with you on the show, and congratulations on all the wonderful work you've done to help with the Ride Like a Girl movie, which will be on show to the general public this week, and I'm sure received very well. Would you agree?
Absolutely. It's exciting, and never thought we'd get there, to be honest. It seems like 5 years ago that we were filming it, but there's so much involved to get it up onto the big screen, and all reports are that even, you know, probably the hardest people to please are people in our own industry, and it was only the other day Mick Price was at a screening, and he was glowing about it. So to hear participants in racing speak so highly of it, you know you've nailed it.
And that's thanks largely to the role you've played, no doubt, Chris, in making sure all the horse work looks spot on. Thanks very much for joining us.
No worries, Joey. Thanks for having me.
That's Chris Simons, one of the key players behind the scenes in the making of the movie Ride Like a Girl, out this week.
Shortly after Skidore's win early in the piece at Caulfield yesterday, Channel 7's Bruce McAvaney quoted a very interesting statistic, and that was centred around the horse's part owner, Rupert Lee, and the success he's had over the past 12 months. It's been remarkable. Bruce quoted a figure of around 77 winners on the track for the past 12 months for Rupert, which would make him, outside of the powerhouses like Godolphin, Australia's most successful owner, and he joins us this morning on the program. It's a stat you weren't that familiar with, actually, by the sound of it, Rupert.
No, not at all, Joe. As I said, you know, Zanardi, I know you've had a reasonably good year, but I'll never question Bruce. I know we all know how good Bruce is with his numbers. And, yeah, look, at the end of the day, you feel proud that you've been able to achieve that number. But you wouldn't have got there without the, you know, the likes of the John Hawkses and the Mike Moronis and a scattering of other, you know, trainers, because you rely on them with their knowledge and their ability to pick the right horses. So I think we've just been in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, yeah. And Skidore winning yesterday, what were your thoughts on his performance?
Yeah, no, we've always had a nice opinion of the horse, and I know Danny has always wanted to get the horse off him to distance. I think Darwin initially thought the horse was more of a sprinter than a distance horse, but if you look from the mother's pedigree, she was more of a stayer. And actually, Danny had actually trained the mother, so he knew a fair bit about the pedigree. And he wanted to go via this path and hopefully get up to the Derby distance, which, if you look at the stat, we're talking about stats, the particular race, I think, has produced the winner of last year's Derby. And I think 2 years prior to that, the Derby winner came out of that race again. So I think we're in the right track with him.
Yeah, well, that's exciting. What else have you got coming up over spring that we should be keeping an eye out for, Rupert? No doubt there's a few in the wings.
Yeah, there are. I mean, on the way through, there's like a lot of other trainers and owners. We've lost a few with minor injuries and ailments, which always happens. But and I think we can look forward to horses like Sandra and Elaine running in the Everest. Unfortunately, we didn't go to Sydney yesterday with him. We thought the track would be too heavy, but as it turned out, it was only a slow five. So anyway, he'll go a different path. We've got Brutal. Brutal slips out to the trial Friday. You've got horses like Tufano, who unfortunately failed yesterday, but I think so did quite a few that hit that headwind. I know Mike's got a big opinion of her. Buffalo River, I think he's heading down to the Golden Eagle path as well. We've got Sound, who is running in the Caulfield Melbourne Cups. He's a bit of a forgotten international horse, but if you go through his European form of last year, it's very, very strong, and I'd suggest that if he comes back and reproduces that form after acclimatising, I'd say he'd be an excellent chance in both Cups. And then your other horses, the ones which are coming through the grades, and hopefully there are a few 2-year-olds about to hit the track. So, you know, exciting times.
Yeah, your success as an owner, Rupert, is notable, as it was highlighted yesterday on the coverage on Channel 7. But for those that are out there doing their bit in the industry and trying to get winners, what's the key to this success, would you say, in a nutshell?
I think the key to success is, you know, backing your trainers who and the people they have supporting them. And I think just getting into the right stables and putting the faith into the people that you know more about the industry than what you do. And I try not to interfere too much. I mean, I've got my thoughts, and over the years, you obviously play the fair bit of information that you think is handy to help you when collecting yearlings. But at the end of the day, I've got so much confidence in the people like, you know, John Hawkes, Mike Moroney, your Mick Prices, your David Hayes's, your Tony McAvoy's, and even Henry Dwyer and a few others. But at the end of the day, I think it's more important that you back their knowledge and you support them. And that's one thing which I've always done. I've never questioned them. I mean, when a horse needs gelding, you geld them and you just do exactly what they want you to do. And as I said before, I think I've been pretty fortunate in being supported by some of the best trainers going around.
And Chautauqua, it's great to see him go on to his new equestrian life so well. He's enjoying it and doing a good job.
Yeah, when you look at the footage of him, and we get it weekly, the you know, they're just so impressed, not just, you know, having the horse there, just loving his personality, but he's taken to it like a duck to water. I mean, as Rob Galen said, they thought it may take anything between 9 and 12 months to get the horse to understand, you know, his new craft. But he said he's learned it that quickly. He'll have him out there, I'm hoping, sometime early next year, because you just watch the horse and he really has loving what he's doing. And I suppose when you do that, and you're such an intelligent horse, and you're not doing something, obviously you're going to, you know, get hold of what he's trying to do a lot quicker than horses that maybe don't want to do it. But every footage we have of him, we're just looking at a very happy, contented horse, and he's got such a massive following, and it's going to be just an exciting path to, you know, to watch the horse come out and hopefully give people the joy that he gave them on the racetrack in the show ring.
Yeah, I think he'll be an enormous success. It's really good to see you've placed him well there. Thanks for joining us on the show this morning, Rupert, and good luck over spring.
Thank you very much, Joe, and good luck to all the other owners. It's a damn tough industry, and just, as I said before, just have confidence in the trainer, and hopefully they can all have the successes on over the spring as well.
That's Rupert Lee, our final guest on Talking Horses this morning, and that's all we've got time for on this week's edition. Hope you enjoyed the program. Until next week, take care. Bye for now.